The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
People like me, Paddy, from the outside looking in, like I'd have learned way more off watching the likes of Bernard Brogan than I'd have learned off Jeremy Connolly and David Clifford, because them boys are freak shows.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, I'm delighted Brian O'Driscoll is with us on this Thursday evening. How are you keeping, Brian?
Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
I'm very well. So we are just over a fortnight away now from the first Lions game against Japan in Scotland. So we thought we'd get you on, have a chat about your four tours of duty and maybe get down and dirty into some of the gossip of those four tours, maybe get you in a little bit of trouble on social media over the next few days and get a few stories out of you, because I'm sure there were plenty down through the years. Obviously four tours in 01, 05, 09 and 2013, and we have a few little questions we want to throw your way, so be as honest as you can be, Brian, please.
This show gets me in most trouble. You know, I'm fine in my everyday life, you know, on BT Sport, you know, the things I do, but what I think are throwaway remarks on this must be something to do with you guys being able to do your job so well that you tease this stuff out of me without me being suspecting.
That's exactly what it is.
So yeah, do you know what? When I think I've done a good show and I see a headline the next day, apparently not.
Sorry, before all that, who did I see was over at your house for a barbecue last week?
What night? I'm only joking. Jane Seymour.
Wow.
The one and only Jane Seymour. She was
very complimentary about your cooking.
She was. She obviously didn't eat all of the food, but you know, she picked a few half-decent salads. I didn't even realize that she's a vegetarian, and it was a full barbecue put on for her, and she ate chicken and burgers and sausages.
Sorry, what?
For the first time, she said, in a lot of years. So,
wow, that is being polite,
Jane.
Isn't it?
Isn't it just,
did,
you know?
Did she know that this, she
around
didn't think
her
this
plate
was,
wow. A little bit, but no, yeah.
That's a very Irish trait where you turn up and you're almost too embarrassed. I'll just go along with this and eat it and I don't want to be rude.
I'm putting it down to the marinade, Nathan.
Okay,
she just couldn't resist. She had
a little
taste and it worked.
All right. Well, listen here. Your barbecues are the place to be, it seems. We're going to start with your best and worst roommate on a Lions tour. On a Lions tour, do you stay with the same
this
person
is such
for the
a
full
thankless
tour?
One. No, you don't. You change every 3 or 4 days. So even if you do get a bit of a sketchy one or someone that you don't hit it off with, or that's a big snore, or there's some issue where you just don't have a connection, at least you know you move on pretty quickly. In some cases, you might maybe a room for 5-6 days, but that would be on the long side of things.
Right.
So I think it's really important that you do move around, and there's no point in rooming with, you know, players from your own country. You know them well, even if from other provinces. You've got to get out of your comfort zone and you got to go out and understand how people tick and see the other side to them, because, you know, we do have preconceived notions of people, but, you know, that we play against, but we don't know the personalities. The only way you do that is by chatting to them and spending time with them and chewing the fat late at night and kind of just hanging with one another, and then subsequently you end up hanging with some of their pals, and that's how you get to know the squad at large.
So who did you like sharing a room with?
Well, it was such a baptism of fire in many ways, in an exciting way, in 2001, because I think my first roommate in Australia was Jason Robinson. And obviously I grew up, you know, watching rugby league. I was a big rugby league fan, watching him and that Wigan team in the 90s. And, you know, he'd only just transferred across the Union himself, like a number of months, and then he's picked in the Lions. And the next thing I know, I'm rooming with him. And I have to say, it was really enlightening. It was very interesting, very different perspective on life at that time. He was kind of born again Christian, and just some really interesting stories about his upbringing, his life, about the Wigan days. Remember, you know, one of the first nights him telling me that he was playing with Tuigha Mala in Wigan, and he was kind of messing around and acting Jack the Lad. And Tuigha Mala came into training and told him, "I had a dream about you last night." And he said, "You were at the top of the world and it crumbled underneath you." And he said that was the eureka moment for him to get his act together and pull his socks up and kind of behave a little bit more like an adult. I think he was a father of one or two at that stage. So he, because when you hear those sort of stories firsthand, it's, you know, it is pinch yourself moments. Mm.
Would you be looking at Jason Robinson then and the way he conducts himself around the place at that stage when you're a younger player in your first Lions tour, as to how he kept himself in such good shape and trying to pick his brains that you can bring back when a Lions tour is over?
Well, that's the great thing about Lions tours. And I guess when you look at guys that miss out and the IP that they pick up from other players that are a bit more experienced or do things slightly differently, I think that's the real, that's the miss. Besides the experience piece, you know, the likes of James Ryan and Gary Ringrose, what they would learn from experienced campaigners like Owen Farrell and Maro Itoje and guys, Alan Wynne-Jones. So it's undoubtedly you are keeping an eye on them. You're watching exactly what they're doing, what they're eating, how they're behaving, what they have to do to get their bodies right, to be fit for the game, what extras they're doing at training, what little, you know, drills they're doing that you might be able to steal and make your own when you go back home. So it's all about taking traits of different people and just keeping scanning the whole time to see, you know, what way you can modify and improve your own performance and your own general outlook on being a professional.
In terms of the purely rugby side, is there any protectionism around the sort of intellectual capital that you may have had from Leinster and Ireland? Or do you feel if somebody's asking about plays that certain coaches might have done, do you have to be honest, or are you trying to keep out and back?
No, you can't think that way. You know, it's if you're in or you're not. And we gave, you know, obviously trying to understand what became a big play for the Lions in my tours was that Brumbies play, but not just running through the motions of it. And, you know, it's the 10-12 behind 13-10, but the running lines and what exactly is needed to sit the defense down. And so trying to give that intel to, you know, those playing with you to make sure that you're able to catch the opposition anytime you pull the plays. I think you have to give of all your best plays, but it also makes you have to go and refine what you've done previously and evolve as a national squad when you do go back and when you play against those players in subsequent years. That you've got, it's almost like a game of chess. It's like wondering what they're thinking about what play you might be playing and tweak it slightly. So it's just, it's all part of the evolutionary nice process of Lions and international rugby anyway.
I'm not surprised that Jason Robinson was there as best roommate. Who was the worst roommate you shared with?
I'd say Will Greenwood would say that I was the worst roommate.
Why?
He said that when I came in, he said he thought the place had been burgled within 5 minutes. I was in, 21, 22-year-old. And he said he was obviously a bit of a neat freak and that was not my thing back then. But I've changed the errors of my ways. I would say someone that I found challenging, because if you didn't get to the bathroom first thing in the morning, they owned it for 2.5 or 3 hours prepping themselves for the game, and that would be Gavin Henson. The full body sculpting, leg shave, fake tan, moisturized, the whole shebang went on the morning of the game. I'm not laughing.
No, you're not just saying that because it's the easy target. Everyone assumes this actually happened.
I'm not joking. This happened.
So would he be setting the alarm early to start his pre-match routine?
No, because the games in New Zealand are evening kickoff, right, so he doesn't have to. But I remember being in the room and thinking, God, you know, shower and whatever else he needs to do, whatever other business he needs to do in there, but just went on and on and on. And he came out looking like a different person. And Gav was big on, you know, look good, play good. What's the other part of that phrase? You know, play good, they pay good. So, you know, he really believed that if he was looking cock of the walk, that he was going to perform better. And listen, that's what worked for him. But I remember thinking, this is actually insane. And then subsequently, another, you know, roommate that I had, you know, 09, Lee Byrne, kind of reinforced that. He had bottles of Saint-Tropez in the bathroom. I remember him being on to his girlfriend at the time and him saying, I need you to bring some more fake tan over for me when you're traveling, because I don't think they have Saint-Tropez here. So Like,
have you ever, world's pastiest man, have you ever used Saint-Tropez?
I have put Saint-Tropez on my wife's back, but I have never put Saint-Tropez on my own body. I can categorically say that. Oh, sorry, I jest. Did I? No, I didn't. We won't go there.
Here we go. Here we go. Best trainer on a Lions tour.
I've got to be Johnny Wilkinson, doesn't it? Just the attention to detail was insane. I just had an insatiable appetite for hard work, be it getting out early and just the hours of practice that went on way beyond everybody else. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before in 2001, and then he backed it up in 2005, even though he hadn't played for England for a number of years. It was insane. He just, you know, be it gym work, but mostly just his kicking game and his obsession around it. So I would say the quality of his training and the few amount of errors he made was quite staggering over the course of the tours that I was involved.
Was it always quality? Was there a lot of quantity with Wilkinson as well? If you're watching somebody putting a lot of hours in, is it hard to stay in your own routine?
But I was both. It's phenomenal to have that concentration span to be able to, and for your body to be able to hold up the way it did. Each repetition felt like the last. And we would have done kicking drills at the end of the game, but the accuracy, you know, we're trying to drop balls into like a 5 meter corner, but hold them up before going into touch. He himself and Dave Allred, our kicking coach at the time, would have been pretty close with Johnny, would have been better, but miles better than anybody else at being able to manipulate and control the ball and shape it where necessary. And he was, you know, back in those days, it was coming off his right boot as comfortably as it was off his left, which was totally alien to so many of us to be able to see someone so left foot dominant, clearly from a natural point of view, but having trained his right peg the way he did is kind of amazing. And obviously that drop goal in the World Cup came off his right foot.
Yeah, it makes it all worthwhile in the end. Worst trainer on the Lions tour?
It's really hard to remember like bad trainers. I remember like Jason Leonard was a guy, I wouldn't say necessarily a bad trainer, but training was a means to an end. I remember Leonard telling me that he used to play some games in the 90s when he wouldn't touch the ball. And so he'd go at training going, I wonder if I can get through this training session without actually touching the ball. I was like, surely not a training session. I will say that we used to have an award for worst trainer in Ireland. And then I think it kind of crept into the occasional Lions session. I had one absolute howler training session in 2013. We just traveled to Hong Kong and we'd won the Magners League or the Pro, whatever it was, the Pro 12 as it was then. And so I hadn't actually had that week's training with the squad. So we went to Hong Kong and the lads started having a few beers. And I was like, I can't have a few drinks and go train the next day, particularly in the heat of Hong Kong. Anyway, I felt as though I needed to invest in the team and go out and have a bit of a laugh and try and bond. Anyway, that went pear-shaped. I ended up, my last memories are wrestling with Manu Tuilagi in the back of a taxi on our way back to the hotel. Anyway, the next day I had a howler. I was running in the wrong direction of some of the drills, but that was just about an effort. It was just, you know, they Gats knew. Gats is all about, but, you know, play hard, but work hard. Then the next day, work it off. Oh my gosh, I've never struggled in a training session quite like it. But it was probably the first time, I'd say, in about 7 or 8 years that I'd had a drink before a training session, and I didn't have one after that. It was torture. And it must have been 33 or 34 degrees. We trained at noon, and I honestly was going like the wrong direction at one stage in one drill. And the lads obviously clipped it all up and played it in the video session later on that week.
That's fair enough. What was the most surprising friendship you made on tour? We're talking about someone who you might have had preconceived notions about from playing against them, but who actually surprised you.
I think probably Mike Phillips. Phil's, he is the guy that everyone loved to hate on the pitch and get, you know, antagonize. And rub up the wrong way, and it was easy to do with him. He's a fiery, feisty character. So, you know, and obviously he's never been shy of confidence, but if you get to know him and understand that, it's in some ways he's very serious, but in some ways kind of taking the piss a little bit as well. And I could understand why people would get irritated by him, but he is great value if you take him for what he is. And you know, arrived into the room, and literally within 5 seconds was like, "Do you know Bono?" like straight in with the celebrity questions. He just finished up a relationship with Duffy at the time, and celebrity was his thing. I just remember going, "Oh my god, here we go!" But it was great value. The few days that we had together, and then now when we meet up, we were, you know, working for ITV at the World Cup in Japan, and hanging out was good fun. And he's loose with a few jars, but aren't we all? But it was great. He's always good value.
Yeah, the Welsh have quite a few good looking lads. They know how to look after themselves.
Yeah, I don't know if Filsy was ever one of the.
There was no Saint-Tropez.
Saint-Tropez might have been, mind you, like they were doing beds as well. Some of them. James Hook was a big one for the beds. I'm sure Mike Phillips has probably did a few. Did something to top up his tan. But yeah, good looking fella, and the confidence to follow with it.
Of the four tours you went on, which was your favourite?
Definitely 09. Great fun. Really good team spirit. The pressure for me was off because Paulie was captain and I was a senior player, but it was, you're not front and centre. The rugby was really good. We played a great brand. I knew where to pick and choose my nights and have my fun. The timing of the games in South Africa is much more conducive to the squad bonding, you know, 4 o'clock kickoffs rather than 8, 9 o'clock at night in Australia, New Zealand, where the non-playing team are gone to bed by the time the squad gets back to the hotel. That's really important. I think not enough is made of that. You know, for everyone to get together at 6, 7 o'clock back in the team hotel, share a beer, a cup of coffee, and chew the fat over a game, or just kind of the being there to kind of welcome the team back in if you've arrived back to the hotel early, that stuff actually counts, and that's important. And it's going to be really important on this tour because they're obviously going to be in even more of a bubble than we would ever have been previously.
Is a Lions tour different in how you can reflect on it at the end of your career? Is the end result as important? Because you pick 09 where the Lions were beaten, albeit the first two tests are two of the greatest tests there ever were, that actually the journey and the friendships are different from a regular season with a Leinster or Ireland where there's a proper full debrief and you got to go and do it all over again.
Yeah, they are different because you know you'll never play with that team again. Even if you play on another Lions tour, there'll be at least, you know, 40% of players will be different. And you might have a similar experience with other guys, but that group of players will never come together again. And so, you know, when you accept it for what it is and you throw, you know, down your nationality at the door and you get involved as a Lion, I think it's a really, really special thing. And it's a bond. I don't know necessarily if it's a bond like they had in the 60s and 70s when they were spending 3 and 4 months together and lifetime friendships. But we, you know, I've got, you know, good connections to certain guys. Martin Williams, you know, in Wales would be another guy that would pick up where we left off. And even though you mightn't be in regular conversation with these guys, it does feel as though even with not winning the series up until 2013, that you still forge great bonds and relationships with some of those guys.
Who was your toughest opponent?
Do I have to pick a centre?
You don't have to. You can pick a centre and somebody else.
Should I joke and say Tana?
I was wondering when that was going to come up.
obviously, I can't pick Tana because it was too brief.
Well, he left his mark.
He did. Let me think. Nathan Gray had a good series, even though in 2001, I got absolutely smashed by him in the second test. One of the biggest collisions of my career. I remember getting up from it, and he got a penalty from it too. I just think he was a no-nonsense player. Tim Horan had retired from the Australian team. He had a new partnership with Daniel Herbert, who again had a very good third test in 2001. So they were a tough centre pairing, particularly having gotten the better of them in the first test. For them to bounce back and play the way they did in test two and three was pretty impressive. And then, you know, Faree and John de Villiers in 2009, that was ferocious. That test series was one that I look back on, even though we won it. And it puts a smile on my face because it was gladiatorial rugby at its very best and its most ferocious. And I think it was a throwback to kind of 30 or 40 years ago, the ferocity of it, and thinking about, you know, how many bodies left the field, but yet it felt real and raw and honest.
When you're thinking about how sore your body was after game, and I know you end up missing the third test because of the injury in the second test against South Africa, is that right up there? Avoiding an actual injury just from what you had put into a game?
Yeah, it would have been. Obviously, I was concussed, so it's kind of sometimes that it's hard to differentiate between that and how you're actually physically feeling. But that was just a different level of physicality. Just every impact felt enormous, felt just seismic to a point that, gosh, I don't feel those sort of collisions very often. And every contact felt like that in that test match. And, you know, you look at different moments in that test. I think we really kicked ourselves in the foot. And part of it is my fault. In the final play of the first half, we ran a Brumbies play. And maybe it was a bit naive of me to call it, but Jamie Roberts was enthusiastic and he gave away a blocking penalty because he didn't understand that Brumbies play of when he needed to come off the gas and not charge into Jean de Villiers when I'd actually sent Stephen Jones around the corner and the referee pinged us and they knocked over a 53-metre penalty. And that just felt like it just gave them a chance. We'd built a 12 or 13-point lead and that just pulled it back to within a converted try and a penalty. If we'd held on there, it just felt as though the momentum was with us. So I look back on that really ruefully, that I should have chosen a better shot selection there, carried myself, or I should have given it to Jamie.
Well, we've got a classic game club coming up over the next couple of weeks on that second test, so we'll be sure to spend a good 10 minutes on that moment of the game in particular. Best coach you worked with. Now, this can be any member of the backroom staff, which means when we talk about 2005, it could be a very long list.
Yeah, I am going to I'm going to pick an outlier that you're not going to expect, and I'm going to go with Bob Stewart, who nobody will know who he is, but he was the Scottish physio. I think he might be the English physio now, or certainly is in the English setup. But I had him in 05, definitely, maybe 01. I'm not entirely sure if he was on the 01 tour, but definitely 05. And then in 09, he got me fit for playing in the test series. I was having massive nerve problems with my shoulder. I played in the Heineken Cup final, not really being able to pass from right to left. And my strength was massively down. And we just worked together for a week solid when I arrived over to South Africa. And he was a phenomenal. He was doing, you know, he was using physio techniques that I had never come across before, and it completely transformed my operating from a passing and a movement perspective. So I am going to go with Bob and shout out to him. How you know, when someone stands out that clearly, it means that they've made a big impact, all right.
Do you give Bob a call if you're ever over in the UK then when you were still playing and think you had the magic hands?
Well, you know, thankfully I'm in a position where I don't need to go and get too much treatment these days. But if I was in the UK and someone, you know, there's a guy in Ireland, and people come to me and ask me when they've had an injury or, you know, who should I use? And I always use a guy called Mark McCabe, not the DJ, a physio called Mark McCabe. He worked with Ireland back in the early 2000s. And for me, he was kind of ahead of the curve as well. And Bob fits into that mold. So if I was in the UK and someone asked me, you know, who's the best you've come across, it would undoubtedly be him.
Not Mark McCabe, the maniac guy then. So
not the maniac guy. That's No, two different guys.
Our rugby and off the ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us. Everyone in Brian O'Driscoll is with us. He's going through some of his best and worst from his four Lions tours. The best social secretary / entertainment officer on any tour?
Andy Powell. Just from an entertainment point of view, keeping us going again on that 09 tour, on the bus. The lisp was hilarious, and he just had some outrageous things to say. Obviously, he's well known for his golf cart antics and the M4 or whatever it was, but he was just loose as a goose, but yet, you know, really hardy. I remember we all went around the bus early on and got everyone to, you know, to say one thing about yourself, and his comment was, if you need go forward, I'm your guy. So it was like Ron Seal. It's like, what it does what it says in the tin. But yet there was, you know, great fun to him. And we had lots of laughs around his antics.
Were you on many committees? How many committees are there on the Lions tour?
It depends, tour by tour. You know, social and music usually. And then, yeah, entertainment as well and then maybe a day off. Committee to make sure that you can come up with five or six things that, you know, lots of people will enjoy. So in, you know, there's the bungee jumping stuff, or in South Africa, you know, golf or shark diving and all that, carry on Robben Island, that stuff. So it's up to usually guys that have been on one tour, but it's committees for the more experienced guys. Tended not to get too much stuff that they were kind of handing it out to others. So you earn your crust in your early tours, and then you sit back and reap the rewards.
The debutante, then the youngest player on the tour, gets the mascot. Bill, I think the mascot is currently called, was named Leo pre-2013. Who was the best caretaker of the Lions mascot? Like, this is something that is taken quite seriously.
It is, yeah, right. But like, it's obviously taken seriously by the person that has to carry it around, but the rest of us are relatively oblivious. Now, I do remember with Stuart Hogg in 2013, the lads were always trying to steal it on him. And if he didn't turn up to every team meeting or breakfast with Bill, like, it's a real pain in the arse for whoever it is, because you have to bring it everywhere with you. So the lads used to always try and steal it, and then he'd be fined as a result of not knowing where it was. And it's just easy fines and easy, you know, childish behavior. But my other memory is, I don't know who was in 05, and I don't know in 09, I can't remember, but Johnny...
05 was Matt Stevens, 09 was Lee Halfpenny.
Okay, yeah. Again, I can't, like, nothing jumped out on there, but Johnny Wilkinson had him in 01, but then we never saw Bill either, because he was just always down the training ground with Johnny. So probably backfired a little bit. It was like, you know, if on the occasion that you did see Johnny, Bill inevitably was with him, but that wasn't very often.
To finish up then, Brian, what was your favourite Lions game? Doesn't have to be a test, but up to yourself.
It has to be the Gabba in 01. Just, you know, we weren't able to warm up on the pitch, because I think there was like some kids' games organized out on the main pitch beforehand, like right. Something insane. Only something you could have 20 years ago. Anyway, we ended up warming up indoors, good indoor facilities because it's Aussie rules, and then we didn't see the crowd gathering and that sea of red and running out. It just felt like you're in Cardiff Arms Park or the Principality. It was just this sea of red, and I remember getting goosebumps, going, wow, if this is, I want a bit more of this, if this is what Lions rugby is all about. And then we went and played, you know, the best test match that I've been involved in, and in a Lions tour, and pulled Australia apart. And that was the series. And I look back now, we really, you know, we should have won it in two and then still should have won it in three. But they showed their bottle and managed to turn it around. But the just the sense of occasion, the crowd there, obviously I scored my try from halfway. So all those things kind of added to it being a phenomenal a phenomenal night. And then a few beers in the City Rowers. I don't know if the City Rowers is still going in Brisbane, but yeah, we had a good night that night too.
How vividly do you remember the try?
Yeah, very vividly. I remember it. I remember, you know, this being this mini mall being set up, and Johnny getting, you know, just about to get the pass, and I could see that they had some big units out in the middle of the park. And Johnny likes to call an awful lot of phase plays himself, and I just, on this occasion, I just roared at him to hit me with it, and I kind of had already picked where I was going to go. I think it was Jeremy Paul, or was it Cannon? I'm not sure who was the hooker at the time, but Nathan Gray was just coming back into the defensive line at that time. He picked up a little bit of a knock, and I literally ran at two of the bigger units and got through. And then I went charging through and kind of looked for some support, and Danny Grewcock was the only one there, and I could feel Matt Burke coming charging at me, and I genuinely thought, I better get out of the way here, he's going to kill me. And I stepped, you know, I got a good step away, and he didn't get a hand on me, and I was like, my momentum's still going here, I think I can keep going. And I just and then I realized that Joe Roth wasn't going to come across, and I needed to dive a little bit early. And yeah, it was kind of, you look back and think, you know, it was a good try, but it was the importance of the try,
the context
at
that
time,
yeah,
as well. Yeah, we just felt as though it was the biggest shot in the arm that we could have gotten, and it felt like it was such a momentum builder.
And did you realize, you obviously know then how important it is in terms of that game, but in terms of like your career, you've already achieved a lot of special things even at that stage. Did you realize that, you know, this is the type of try, the type of moment I'm going to be talking about in 20 years time?
Not in the slightest. I thought it was a good try, don't get me wrong. And good tries are usually about the opposition. It's not about what you do, but it's about the team you're having to score against. And obviously they were the World Cup winners in 99, defending that crown and on this Lions tour. And I just remember thinking that was a decent try, and not realizing how much it kind of impacted people, the, you know, the supporters that we met over the next couple of weeks, and maybe it started dawning on me on holidays and in the years afterwards how much it had kind of hit home with people. And I definitely didn't expect it to be, you know, a highlight that I'd look back in 20 years and go, wow, yeah, that really was a great moment. You're just living in this moment when you're in there and doing it, and you're just enjoying it. I was just a young kid having fun, and I was pinching myself. I was playing in the Lions series with Martin Johnson and Lawrence Delalio and Keith Wood. What was I doing there? And all of a sudden I was scoring these good tries. It just didn't feel real to me.
Yeah, I was saying to Teddy Sheringham when he was on last week, it's a shame that sports people don't get royalties every time a great goal or a try is replayed, because you'd be a rich, very rich man for the amount of times that's going to be played over the next few weeks, I think.
Yeah, and listen, you want to be involved in great moments. Like I said, it's just a pity that we didn't back it up with winning that second test. You know, we had them broken if we took our opportunities in the first half of that second test down in Melbourne. We butchered one or two try scoring opportunities, and we could have put them away. Could have won that in two tests. We should still have won it in three tests, but yeah, that really feels like the painful one that got away. Whatever about South Africa, that was, you know, yeah, we let it slip, but Australia in 01, that was there for the taking.
Brian, great stuff. Don't think you got in too much trouble there. Thanks.
No. I don't know if Gav Henson's going to love hearing that, but you know,
I don't know if he'll be over for the barbecue. When is the BBQ by BOD range coming out? You can have that one. Watch this space. All right, Brian, great stuff. We'll chat to you over the next couple of weeks.
Nathan, talk to you. Bye.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quickstart car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.